Your day has just begun. Yeah. But for DJ and PK, they're just hitting their stride. It's time for all your headlines from the night in sports. As DJ and PK tell you what's trending.
Are you ready?
On 97.5 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network. Yeah. Hashtag NFL.
This is a contact disease, and we play a contact sport. So the way this thing passes along is through contact, and that's what we do for a living. And the way we interact with each other at the facility, at practice, weightlifting, at the meal room, it is us shoulder to shoulder, standing by each other, passing things around. So there is a long list of ideas we need to come up with on how to make this environment safe for us.
That's Cleveland Browns center J.C. Treader. Said the COVID-19 is not going to, quote, kneel down to almighty football, close quote, and that as new president of the NFL Players Association, his foremost priority is always going to be the health and safety of the players. So we'll see what they come up with there, or see how many players are immunocompromised, or their spouses or kids or parents or whatever are. Wouldn't be surprised if a few of them sit out. I expect most of them will play, but I wouldn't be surprised if a few of them sit out.
Well, I think they should listen to him because, as you know, he's a treader setter. See, JC,
I got
treader,
it. Yeah, now I got
treader
it.
Setter.
It's too early. It's too early for
a little
this.
Early morning.
How do I
poetry?
Come up with these?
It's pure genius, PK. That's what it is. It's pure
thank you.
Genius.
I can't hear you. What'd you say?
Genius.
We have a bad connection. Oh yeah,
pure
I'm hearing
genius.
You better now.
The chief medical officer, Dr. Alan Sill, says we fully will expect that we'll have positive cases that arise because we think that this disease will remain endemic in society. There's a word we don't use often enough, endemic. Shouldn't be a surprise that new positive cases arise. Our challenge is to identify them as quickly as possible and prevent spread to other participants.
I thought Fauci was the chief medical officer.
No, not for the NFL.
Why not? I think that the country supersedes the NFL, so he's higher on the food chain.
Well, that's true. That's true. It's just
not this guy's paid by the NFL.
Yeah, this guy's not working for the
he's
National Institute.
He's higher on the Fauci chain.
Is it 9 o'clock already?
Yeah, right.
Oh, my gosh. Please stop my stomach.
The league strengthened the Rooney Rule during the owner's teleconference. Teams will now be required to interview at least two candidates from outside their organization for any vacant head coaching job. At least one minority candidate from outside their organization for any vacant offensive, defensive, or special teams coordinator job. Each of the 32 NFL teams is going to establish a minority coaching fellowship position. And the NFL changed its anti-tampering policy to relax the rules that allowed teams to deny assistant coaches and executives the opportunity to interview for jobs in other organizations. You know, I'm pretty familiar with that, what happens in college, because we've seen it on the local staffs and we've heard the head coaches talk about it. But from what I was reading, I gathered there's plenty of examples of the NFL, and I just haven't followed as closely, that maybe position coaches haven't been allowed to interview for coordinator positions. Oops!
Well, particularly if their team is still playing in the playoffs. I mean, they've been very persnickety about that, and I understand it's a sensitive situation because, you know, if you're in the playoff, not every team has a chance to go to the Super Bowl, but I think that, you know, with the bounce of the football and injuries and whatnot, there's probably more teams in than any other sport when you get into the playoff that actually have the opportunity to get to the ultimate goal.
Yes,
and that's
totally
in the
agree.
Super Bowl. And so, you know, you really can't say, hey, you know, have some divided attention, but I think they could probably figure out a way to do it, that maybe you need to do it on Mondays before the game on Saturday or Sunday, depending on what it is. And so we'll allow you a couple of hours because, you know, they're not working 24/7, even though they are working probably 23/7, you know, leading up to that. And now with this Zoom capability and whatnot, if a man, irregardless of any ethnicity, but certainly I understand what they're trying to do here, has an opportunity to better himself, you know, he should be allowed to explore that opportunity on his own time as long as it doesn't impact the task at hand. So maybe they could come up with something on a Monday night or whatever it might be. I don't know. It's off the top of my head. That they can figure out a way to accomplish that. And it's not like for the NFL purposes, you know, with college, you want to get somebody in there ASAP because you're trying to salvage a recruiting class. Well, there's no such thing on the NFL. So if you want to hire somebody and you decide after a couple of meetings and whatnot that you can do that, and the team still has the AFC or NFC finals to go, and then if they win, obviously the Super Bowl, there's no reason why you couldn't hold off for a couple of weeks. Is it that big of a deal to introduce that particular person on the first Monday in February? It seems to me, of all the things that are out there, that is something that they can accomplish.
DJ and PK.
Hashtag college football.
Big 12 Commissioner Bob Bowlsby said Tuesday the league needs to be up and running by mid-July if the college football season is going to start on time. If not, we're going to probably have to delay the season a little bit. But it's too early to know if we're going to be able to make that or not. Bowlsby's been one of the more aggressive, assertive, positive, whatever
outspoken.
The word is.
Outspoken.
Outspoken, too, yeah, about that they're going to pull this off. So kind of odd to hear it coming from him.
I don't take that as a threat.
No, I took it more as a... Oh, I did take it as a negative. I didn't take it as a threat, but I did take it as a negative, like, you know, we might not be able to pull this off.
Might not be able to start on time is the way I took it. But, yeah, you're going to have some deadlines, basically. I don't know that they're necessarily literally hardcore. If it's not done by noon at June 5th or July 15th, forget it. That's not the way I took it, is that if the season is going to start on time, so certainly you have to have things in order because coaches need to know, players need to know, everybody needs, medical people need to know. And so I think you have to have a target date. To me, I didn't really think that was a big deal. I thought it was, well, of course, you've got to have a target date. And then if you don't have that target date, well, then you have to make another target date to see if you can start it. If you make it a month later, then you start the season a month later. However long your target date moves back, that corresponds with however long the season moves back. But I didn't take it as, well, if we don't get it done by this day, man, we're screwed.
NCAA announced its academic progress rate results on Tuesday, with 15 Division I programs not reaching the threshold needed to compete in postseason events or championships. Most notably, Stephen F. Austin's baseball, football, and men's basketball programs are ineligible. Stephen F. Austin's basketball team was 28-3 this past season, including an upset of Duke on the road. But now, no postseason. Shut down.
Meanwhile, somebody at Arizona just had a check that was delivered to them.
The underground economy continues to thrive. Yeah. DJ and PK.
Hashtag NBA.
90% of it was, I don't know if I can say it on air, but BS in terms of the realness of it. As I stated the other day, that it wasn't real, because a lot of things that he said to some of his teammates went back at him, but all of that was kind of edited out of the documentary, if you want to call it a documentary.
That's Horace Grant right there. Not impressed with The Last Dance. Of course, really at the root of that is that MJ saying Grant was the guy who leaked the information in Sam Smith's book, The Jordan Rules. His quote, lie, 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 if MJ had a grudge with me, let's settle this like men. Let's talk about it, or we can settle it another way. But yet he goes out there and puts this lie out that I was the source behind the book. Sam and I have always been great friends. We're still great friends, but the sanctity of that locker room, I would never put anything personal out there. The mere fact that Sam Smith was an investigative reporter, that he had to have two sources, two, to write a book, I guess. Why would MJ just point me out? Sam Smith coming up at 9 o'clock, and the interview is taped, so we're not going to be able to ask him specifically about what Horace just said, but asking him about the accuracy of the documentary, he thought they did a good job, and you'll hear him say that coming up at 9 o'clock.
Well, the things, I don't think the documentary was inaccurate, but the documentary wasn't a complete and full documentary.
That's what I believe right there, yes.
So, yeah, the stuff they put in there, I mean, they have video on it, so it most of the time it obviously happened, but it didn't touch on everything. It didn't come close, yeah. And I can, if I'm Horace Grant, I'm furious too. I get it, and I read all that stuff, and there was a lot more stuff than you just quoted, and he was upset. Rightly so, because Jordan calls him out. And we know Jordan, if you have any kind of criticism towards Jordan, he not only calls you out, he just writes you off. You're dead to him.
Yep.
He ignores you completely for the rest of his life. And so it is really his way or the highway. That's the way it's going to be. And he thought, Horace Grant thought he wasn't portrayed accurately. And I get it. Why would you be okay with it? Especially if you think that you didn't do it and you were not running around yakking. And really, in the great scheme of things, I don't think that book, who really cares? I mean, it might have been big at the time, but 20-some years later, I don't think any less or more of Horace Grant. So I think he's being a little bit sensitive, but it's him, not me. And I heard some guys nationally on our station last night talking about how Pippen thought he was portrayed poorly in that thing. And Grant put out the thing about Pippen not going back in the game. His point was, well, why did Jordan even broach that subject? He wasn't even on the team then. Who cares what he thinks? It had no effect on him. That was literally the entire season that he did not play. That was the one season, because he came back late in the second season. But why was he yakking his mouth about that? He had nothing to do with it. He wasn't involved in that. Although, and I was surprised to hear that Pippen thought he wasn't portrayed well, because I thought Pippen was portrayed fine. I had no problem with the way. I don't think he came off any worse or any better. And not going in is a bad thing. And as much as I disagree with it, I give him credit for sticking that he would probably do the same. At least he's consistently wrong rather than flip-flopping. But I didn't think Pippen was portrayed poorly. I thought he was portrayed as sort of a tough guy at the end when he was barely able to move, and he still played in the game for no other reason, just to be out there as a decoy. So these guys, as they were portrayed, it's up to them to figure out how it was. And, you know, most of those guys weren't portrayed that well. I mean, I've been talking about Krause for weeks now. He was basically portrayed as a blithering idiot.
Well, he wasn't a blithering idiot, because they wouldn't have won that many championships if he was a blithering idiot. I just think It just got so personal with the breakup, and that's really what he takes the heat for. You know, if they had come back in 99 to go for a fourth straight and lost, I think his reputation would be different. But the fact they didn't get to defend the last title, you know, that's probably the biggest thing. And as far as Horace Grant and Scotty, I just think that it's just so much, it's them, it's all of this is so much more personal. So any criticism stings. You and I are watching it, hear it, and like, yeah, okay. But then we move on after 2 or 3 minutes, and they're still them, and they're just taking it very personal.
And I don't have any problem with that. Right. And I also think that not defending that seventh title, if Jordan would have gone to Reinsdorf and said, you got to do this, you think Reinsdorf would have said, sorry, we're not going to do it because somebody else says so? I don't buy that for a second. It's a bunch of crap.
Utah Jazz guard Mike Conley is donating $200,000 to 5 organizations for COVID-19 aid. He's going to split the money among the Utah Food Bank, Code Crew in Memphis, the Community Shelter Board, and Columbus Urban League in Ohio, the Indianapolis Public Schools Foundation, and the New Haven Missionary Baptist Church in Arkansas. So, Mike Conley, you kind of track his life right there, PK.
Yeah, I don't know about the Arkansas one, but all the other places are
where he was
lived.
Born. Most of the extended family still in Arkansas, he said.
DJ and PK.
Hashtag Major League Baseball.
New Arizona Diamondback center field Starling Marte announced earlier this week that his wife, Noelia, died of a heart attack. She had been awaiting surgery for a broken ankle when she passed away. Tragic and unexpected right there, PK.
Yeah, that was a couple of days ago that he announced that. He put it out there on social media in Spanish and in English. He played for the Pirates for a number of years. I think he's about 31 years old. A nice player, not a superstar, but a nice player. But yeah, he put that out there, and it was just, wow, man, that is so crazy.
The Texas Rangers would prefer to stay home in their new ballpark instead of returning to Arizona whenever it's time to get back to training, have a second mini spring training. They've not worked out at their new stadium yet, but yet a lot of players would prefer to be at home, and the club doesn't need the expense of traveling and putting them up. So I think a lot of teams would end up working out in their own facilities if they have the option.
Well, it depends on if they want to play spring training games or not.
Have you got somebody nearby?
I don't know that how that would work. Whereas if you went to the facilities, that a lot of them and the Rangers, I think they share one out in Surprise, Arizona, with the Royals, and so they would have teams to play with. But I understand that. Speaking of that, this is sort of an unrelated note. You know, the if the NBA comes back and they play some regular season games in home places, which I don't think they're going to do, but the Suns, their arena is undergoing like what the Jazz had a few years back.
Oh, really?
So they're talking about going back.
To the Memorial Coliseum?
Yes, that old thing is still standing. And that would be, man, that would be a time machine throwback. The Madhouse on McDowell. I've been to that place. It's where the State Fair is, and I've been to that many times. And then they have it, you know, for concerts over the years and what other stuff that they've been able to use for. But that thing is a relic, and it's still standing. I don't think it'll happen, but if it did, that would really be cool for the old-timers who are from Phoenix and remember when the Suns, Hornacek's days, he played there. I think he was traded by the time the new arena opened. I'd have to double-check that. But he played in the Madhouse in McDowell.
The equivalent in Utah would be if the Salt Palace was still standing, right? Weren't they about the same era?
So imagine
if the Jazz were, if the Salt Palace was standing, which, you know, it got knocked down 20 or 25 years ago. They brought that thing down.
Right.
All right, that's what's trending. It's brought to you by Shamrock Plumbing. Receive a free reverse osmosis system with the purchase of any water softener at Shamrock Plumbing. 801-295-1690. That's Shamrock Plumbing. All right, coming up, Steve Tate, Ace Tough Foundation, former Ute safety. He's going to join us at 8 o'clock, talk some college football, and then Sam Smith, longtime Chicago Bulls writer, working for Bulls.com now, and he will. We'll hear his interview at 9 o'clock, DJ and PK. It's 97.5 at 1280 The Zone.
The Big Show.
It's a big deal!
With Gordon Monson and Jake Scott.
Radio analyst for the Utah Jazz, our good friend Ron Boone.
Bojan Bogdanovic, isn't that remarkable that he could go as long as he did shooting the ball with a wrist injury like that?
Once you flick that wrist, you're going to experience some pain shooting the ball, but he was able to play right through that, and he still was able to score with it. I thought it was remarkable. What did he end up shooting? 42-43% from the three-point line, and you would think that that would be hard to do.
If we do have some sort of playoff, Booner, how tough is it going to be for the Jazz to make a run without him?
Not to say that they can't do it. The Jazz have players that can get the job done, but the Jazz system complements Bojan more so than what we thought. It's going to be tough to win without him.
The Big Show, weekdays from 2 to 7 on 97.5 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network.
Hot Takes or Toast brought to you by Master Electrical Services. Master Electrical, always open during this challenging time. Call 801-543-2222 for upfront pricing and your satisfaction guaranteed. Master Electrical will light up your day. The NCAA is voting later today on whether to give players a one-time transfer without sitting out. Should they change the rule? What should the vote be? We'll talk with Steve Tate about this. He's going to join us coming up at 8 o'clock. And PK, I think the beautiful thing about this from the radio perspective is that whether you allow them to transfer or not, there's a flaw. You can't pick the perfect plan. You just have to pick the better plan. And because of that, it can be argued forever. And looking at Facebook, people are ready to argue this forever. We definitely have the no way they shouldn't change crowd, followed by the it's 2020, use your head. Of course they should be able to transfer crowd. Mike says, I can't believe all the simpletons who actually believe the kids should still lose a year. It's 2020, use your brain. Literally in every decision we make in life, we don't have to sit out a year if we were to go down a wrong path or have a change of heart. Lots of people here on their high horses.
Well, that's not true at all. There's plenty of no-compete clauses that people have to sign. And so you have to sit out, whether it's a year or 6 months.
Sign a contract that you have to live to the end of.
Yeah, yeah. So, that's not true.
Jason, I think there should be a penalty if an athlete wants to transfer. If a head coach leaves, then an athlete should get a one-time transfer without penalty.
Yeah, but that's a dumb rule right there. So you're going to have a coach. So in Colorado, Tucker leaves them. He backdoors them after, from what we understand, doing many appearances if not the same day, then the day before he actually leaves, announces he's leaving. So that's a major blow. And then you're going to penalize the program and its fans even more by allowing those players then to leave. How about the players at the school he's going to, not the school that he left? That seems like a little bit of a double whammy there. So now all of Colorado's guys who were recruited to a large extent by McIntyre, they're free to go? I don't necessarily have a problem with that, but seems to me that the school he's going to, Michigan, or Michigan State in this case, those players, they didn't sign up to play for him. They signed up to play for the other guy, and he ended up retiring. He wasn't fired, although, you know, there was some maybe
pushed out.
Mutual decision is what I'm looking for. You can't just have it on one. I mean, that sounds good, but so you're going to decimate a program even more? Colorado's already battling uphill. So you're going to throw more gas on it?
Jason says, yes. If I was held to the decisions I made at 17, 18 years old, Lord help me. I think one mulligan is a great plan. I guess this goes back, and you kind of touched on it there. If you transfer for the kid, great, but it also impacts all the other players on the team. They all get hurt when guys move. Now, some of them may get helped, right? It might help someone on a depth chart, so presumably someone could get a bonus out of this.
Yeah, you don't know. It could be a wash. It could have happened even if he was buried on the depth chart, finally has a great offseason, what have you, and gets bigger, stronger, and doesn't matter who the coach is. But the decisions that you're making at 17 and 18, I think that where the stretch in that is, he's implying that those are necessarily life-altering decisions. I don't know that which college you decide to go to is in and of itself a life-altering decision. It may be a 4 or 5 year decision. You are free to transfer. It's not like you can't. Even if you always hear, well, the coach won't let me, he didn't release me to transfer to whatever school. As I understand it, that just means for a year you can't get free schooling. You still go to the school. They can't prevent you from going to whatever school you want to go to, but there's that thing out there that you can't get the scholarship for an academic year, and so you might have to, heaven forbid, pay your own way. Although I think that's ridiculous. I think they should be able to be released, and you have to give Kalani Sitake all sorts of credit. He full well knew that releasing Francis Bernard to go to Utah was not in BYU's best interest, and sure enough, Francis Bernard had a pick six in the game that they just played this past season. Not to say that Utah needed that individual play to beat them. They probably would have beat them either way. But nevertheless, Kalani knew full well that Utah was on the schedule, and he let him go with no repercussion.
Kyle says, I don't like it. Should student-athletes have the right to transfer? Probably, but this will dramatically change college football. You'll see star players transfer like crazy. The smaller schools will lose a lot of their best players to bigger schools. I feel like the rich get richer.
The counter to that, though,
is we've already seen it go the other way. Just saw Jack Sears leave USC for Boise State.
And the 25-count initial counter is also going to be in effect here.
Yeah, that sounds good or sounds bad, however you want to say it. But those guys could already do it anyway if they really wanted it that badly. And
Higher
if you drop
lawyers.
Down a division, you don't have to sit out.
I guess what, if I can read Kyle's mind, Kyle, I'm reading your mind, he'd be worried that Bama and Oregon and Oklahoma will just be looking over the rest of their conference or the area or whatever and trying to pick off a key guy to keep it. I need one more pass
you
rusher.
You don't think they're already doing
this? Guy will do.
They get the cream of the crop. Those players, if they were good enough to go there in the first place, they would. I don't buy that. And the rich already are richer.
Look at the playoff.
You gonna make them more richer?
Alabama and Clemson.
They're back.
It's the same handful of teams every year anyway.
Larry says the vote should be yes. Let them transfer if they choose to. And Daniel says the vote should be unanimous, but should be unanimous for transferring. But I would not be surprised if it fails.
Well, that's what we hear, that it wasn't going to pass.
The recommendation from the Board of Governors is for it not to pass.
Right. So I'm assuming that it's not going to.
Chris says let him go one time. It's for the kids.
I hope it passes myself.
Let him go.
Originally, when I read stuff, I thought it was going to, but like you guys lately, when I've read stuff, it sounds like it's not going
to. Well, that recommendation from that national council says let's not do it this time.
Let's hold off.
Have another vote in 3 years or something? Is that what they're...
They're actually saying they could do it again this coming December when they have that national convention. So
only 6 months?
It might be tabled for a few months, essentially.
I think what we're seeing with Sears, and not every kid can pull this off, but I think we're going to see more kids do it because we're seeing more kids come to school in the for their what would normally be the spring of their senior year of high school, and it seems like the numbers just keep growing in the number of football players who show up for spring ball. So just sticking to that sport for now. If you do that and you take summer school classes, you can get the degree and then be a grad transfer with 2 years to go. And the grad transfers, you know, they already don't have to sit out a year. So play 2 years somewhere, maybe use your red shirt. And, well, I guess you would have to use your red shirt. Play two and use your red shirt year. And then you've got 2 years if you transfer as a grad transfer.
Oh, yeah, I don't think that that's the exclusive. I don't think you need to go to spring ball because the way high school is set up, you can acquire college credits in high school now.
Yep, kids are doing that too,
and
you're right.
So you can load up. I mean, I know plenty of kids who practically had an associate's degree by the time they got out of high school, if that's what they wanted to do.
And on top of that, we're seeing more students all the time. We can get coaches on and they give us the numbers. But the percentage of online classes that students are taking and speeding things up as far
as you basically have to be on the campus year-round. So since you're there, you might as well be taking summer school because they'll pay for it. And you're already there to begin with. It's not like you have, you know, go play intramurals, buddy, because they don't get time off. You know, they get time off in December and then a little bit of time between the end of the spring semester and by the time the summer school starts up. So that's a week or two, whatever it might be. And then you got to be back to be in the conditioning. So they're going to be enrolled in summer school. And I like that rule. You know, I think the rule as it was intended is bogus, where the graduate programs. But I think that the better part of it is it's not forcing, but it's choosing to increase the focus on getting a diploma, which ultimately, as Kyle has said a million times, that's the whole point. And so get the diploma, get the degree. And if you should need that as something in your back pocket, that's good to shoot for. Now, many of them don't do that. I mean, Zach Moss and Huntley, and I even think the other kid, Damari Simpkins, all three of those kids could have taken off, but they had no desire. They had gotten a degree, so they were technically available for grad transfers. And I think a lot of them don't do that anyway. They stay where they're at. They don't move, but the idea of focusing on a degree is something that is obviously worthwhile. And all of us are going to benefit wherever. And I sure hope Tyler Huntley makes the NFL because I think it would be a phenomenal story. Whether he does or he doesn't, the fact that he has a college degree when he goes to whatever community he's going to settle in, that's going to benefit himself, his family, and his community. So we're all going to benefit. So I like the rule. If it helps sharpen the focus on guys zeroing in on getting to the point of graduation, whether they leave or not, doesn't matter.
Well, we've certainly seen it front and center with the Utes. And I expect that, you know, if if it helps your program and that turns into a plus in recruiting, so there's kind of this feedback loop that keeps helping. I think the one thing that we can see with this transfer rule or with the graduation stuff is that continuity, and it's what you just said about Colorado too, continuity can breed more continuity. You know, it's easier, I think, and guys will transfer everywhere, but I think it's easier if you're coaching at the U to talk to a guy who's considering transferring and say, well, look at the Christian Cox story. Look at, he just told it on the air, so I'm familiar with it. He was on the big show, and he's talking about how he could have transferred, but instead he let the coaches change his position. Now, he ended up being a defensive end, but when he's in the NFL, he ended up being a linebacker, and he said having played all those positions, seen the schemes from different stuff, sharpened all these skill sets, set him up in the NFL. Now, you got to have continuity to be able to tell that story, certainly the Cody Barton story, right? Cody could have transferred along the way, I guess, but he didn't. He stuck it out and built himself into a good player and ends up being a third-round draft pick. The more you have the continuity, you have these success stories, you can tell them and retell them and presumably keep some more kids in the program and on that path. But the more you're in a Colorado situation where a coach gets fired, a new coach comes in, a year later that coach leaves, and now you got kids playing for three coaches, it just seems like all that stuff gets lost. It'd be a lot harder in that situation to sell the stuff the Utes are able to tell their players.
Yeah, okay, I can buy all that.
Hit us up on Twitter, Facebook, DJ and PK. The NCAA is voting today on whether to give players a one-time transfer. Change that rule. Let them transfer without sitting out one time. What should the vote be? You can hit us up on Twitter, David DJ James, on Facebook, DJ and PK.
Yeah. I think what they should do is call it the one-time Alice rule.
One-time Alice?
Yeah. Seeing that, guys, I don't know how that came about. Does anybody know how that expression came about in golf? Yeah. One-time Alice!
That putt?
I don't know.
You got that 25-foot
nice
putt?
Nice putt, Alice.
Yeah. 25-foot putt that's like 7 feet from the
gotta hit it, Alice.
Looking like it might go in.
I'm guessing it comes from Alice in Wonderland, but I don't know.
Alice in Wonderland.
I thought it might have been Alice Cooper.
Oh, Alice Cooper. He's a big-time golfer, too, yeah.
Ron Boone actually golfed with Alice Cooper, and I asked him, did you drop that? He goes, no, I didn't. Come on, Booner.
My dad played in a tournament with Alice Cooper. He's kind of that celebrity guy on their foursome, and I'm like, I asked him the same question. Would you drop? He's like, no, we weren't about to approach that subject.
That was basically Booner's response to it. No, David, I didn't.
Well, I lived with my parents in a basement apartment in Phoenix, and it was right next to Cortez High School, where he went to high school. Literally the fence separated Cortez High from our apartment. We had a little two-bedroom apartment that I lived in, and it was down to three levels, and we lived down in the basement. A lot of bugs down there, but the good thing is in the summer it was cooler. And you want to hear even more freaky? My wife, for a year, coached freshman basketball at Cortez High School. So I'm practically a family member of Alice. And he had a restaurant that is on the street between the ballpark and the Suns Stadium. He doesn't have it anymore, but he did have it. And it was called Cooperstown. And I ate there.
Nice. Alice Cooper came to Utah to play in the Huntsman Golf Tournament up in outside of Park City. And that's where Booner... I think, crossed paths with him. And then he was there, and it was a two-day tournament, and apparently he took a few people from the tournament, hopped on his jet, played the first day, and then flew him, it was either North Carolina or South Carolina, for a concert, flew back, and was ready to golf the next morning. Nice.
Where did nice putt Alice, or one time, where did that expression come from?
I don't know.
Somebody help me out.
Let's
I need to know.
Bob Casper. Brian Taylor, Real Golf Radio, golf historians, help us out.
Investigative journalism here, let's do this thing.
Well, did you ask Sam Smith? I mean, apparently he's an investigative reporter, according to Horace Grant.
I did not. My bad.
And where did Katie bar the door come from? Why is Katie barring the door?
I don't know.
Where did she, what happened that Katie needed to bar the door?
Who has ever barred a door?
Katie.
Okay, bet among our listeners. Maybe Katie's listening.
Well, Katie, if you're listening, please call in. Get on the hotline, or what's it, not the hotline, what's it called? Text line or whatever line.
The open mic on our app.
Open mic line. The open mic line.
Yep, send it in.
Off of our app. Where did that expression come from? These expressions that are out there, just where is the origin? I've pondered this so many times, especially now during these slower times. And it's just racking my brain, and I cannot figure out. Why is Katie barring the door? Why did she need to bar the door? What's going on there? And where, you know, a bird in the hand is worth two in the bushes? Where'd that come from?
Well, there it is. I put it out on Twitter. Hopefully they'll get back to us, PK. They'll let us know.
Oh, I pray.
Yeah, right. Okay. All right, DJ and PK, Steve Tate, Hayes Tough Foundation, former Utah safety. He's coming up at 8 o'clock, and we'll talk with him about this transferring rule and see what he thinks about that as a former player, and also get his thoughts on the Ute defense, which really from the ground up, PK. You know, good news, bad news, right? A lot of talent coming in, but a lot of talent is going to be asked to play right away. You know, they're going to have to blend guys together, guys who've been in the program, guys who have not been in the program, and a lot of guys who haven't played a lot of snaps, and figure it out on the fly. And we'll talk with Steve about that coming up. DJ and PK, it's 97.5 at 1280 The Zone.
Now let's get this party started.
This is Hans Olsen and Scotty G on the Zone Sports Network.
TV wants live sports. They are desperate for live sports. Yeah. We're watching the KBO for crying out loud. It's still on ESPN. You can catch the KBO twice a day.
I tried. I couldn't do it.
I could do it for the first couple of days, but there's just nothing to really...
It's like when you really try to do a crash diet and you're looking at that plate of kale and you're like, I'm not quite hungry enough for that yet.
But if I put ranch and bacon on it...
Then we got a chance.
And put it on a burger.
Yeah, and then remove the kale as you ate the burger. Then we got something.
How did you sneak on there?
Hans and Scotty, weekdays from 10 to 2 on 97.5, 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network. With a little extra time on your hands, it's time to talk about what we're doing to kill time. What did you watch last night? With DJ and PK on 97.5, 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network.
Too much time on my hands. Too much time on my...
PK, what'd you watch last night? Find anything interesting out there on the old tube with no live games to see?
Absolutely, I did. Yeah, a couple of things. I watched the 9th, 10th, and 11th innings, I think it was Game 6, the Rangers and the Cardinals. Now, the Rangers were up 3-2 in that series, and they had a 2-run lead in the 9th. Two outs, two strikes on David Freese with two runners on, and he hits a triple off the wall. I mean, it gets no more dramatic than that. Nelson Cruz sort of misplayed it, not entirely in right field, but I mean, it would have been a great catch, but it was potentially playable, or catchable, I should say. And the two runs come in. Well, what do the Rangers do? Then they turn around in the next inning, at top of the 10th, they score two more runs. Sure enough, man, what do the Cardinals do? They get two back. And then Freeze in the bottom of the next inning, I think, hits a solo game winner. And that was just incredible. And Freeze is a great story. He's from the St. Louis area, and he'd given up baseball, I think, in junior college or something, and then came back to it and ends up being a hero. And, of course, the Cardinals go on and win that series. Unbelievably dramatic in denying Texas, which would have been its first and only World Series. And they kept showing Nolan Ryan. And he was dressed up, and he had a big coat on because it's St. Louis, and it was colder in October. And then I can remember, well, wait a second, they kept showing him for the Houston Astros. So what, is he just an ambassador of Texas, or did he work for one and then go work for the other? I know he played for both teams, I believe. So I did watch that. And that's baseball. When you get into down to that, I know it's boring to a lot of people, but the drama that they have in that sport, with it taking a lot of time, and you can foul off a two-strike pitch, and a pitch can be borderline that they call a ball. It just, oh my gosh, it just, I could feel the intensity however many years that was later. And then I flicked over the NBA channel, and they were doing some stuff with Kevin Garnett. McHale was interviewing him, and then Garnett was interviewing Dwayne Wade. And it was pretty good. So I watched those things, and that filled up most of my night, and I found it to be fairly enjoyable.
What were Wade and those guys talking about?
Dwayne Wade was talking about his life. So McHale was interviewing Garnett.
Okay.
And those are two Minnesota guys. McHale obviously is a Minnesota native, played at the University of Minnesota, and Garnett played with the Timberwolves for a long time. And he's talking about the guys who helped him along the way. Nobody does it by themselves, and you know where he's at in his life. He was fairly recently because he was obviously retired, and he's talking about that. And he sounded like a really highly, highly content person with where he is and what he accomplished in his NBA career. And where he is in life, how he wants to give back to the community that he's living in and help people, not necessarily literally help the people who helped him, but as a form of repayment, helping other people because he received help along the way, and talking about that. And then Dwayne Wade is talking about how he grew up in Chicago, but he grew up in the suburbs, so he didn't have the street cred specifically that the inner city kids had when it came to ball, and his scholarship offers were, you know, Illinois State, Bradley. He ended up choosing Marquette, obviously. He took Marquette to the Final Four, and how that type of stuff where he had to prove himself drove him because, you know, he got scholarship offers. But like DePaul, he made it sound like DePaul was sort of, yeah, we're going to talk to you because you're from Chicago. And he was told by one of the coaches at DePaul that he probably wouldn't play till his junior year. So he didn't feel the love there. So he went up the road to Marquette and played. And then I think he played three seasons. I don't think he was a four-year kid. I'd have to double-check that. But,
right.
He's in the Final Four with them and then goes on and has his Hall of Fame career. And he was a good player because if you're getting a scholarship offer to Bradley and Southern Illinois and to Marquette, you've obviously got to be a good player. But, I mean, he wasn't thought of as this cream of the crop stuff that we see these prodigies out there. And then Garnett was talking about how summer ball and AAU ball is, in a sense, ruining basketball and not allowing kids to develop the important aspects of the game. So they come in underdeveloped and overhyped on that stuff. So it was interesting. It certainly had my attention to where I was not flicking around. And so that was three shows over the span of a couple hours because I was doing some stuff, some personal stuff that I needed to get taken care of. And so I didn't get to the television until about 8 o'clock.
Dwayne Wade, 2 years at Marquette. Looking at the stats here. Yeah, college stats, sportsreference.com.
Well, he really showed them for people who didn't believe in his talent. And obviously he was a premier player. I don't think anybody's talking to him as a top 10 player. But he still had a phenomenal NBA life and was a very good player. There's no question about that.
You know, it's interesting as it goes forward and we hear, you know, there just aren't as many diamonds in the rough these days, you know. And obviously watching The Last Dance, you know, they went into Pippen and Rodman's backstories. And those guys, yeah, I mean, they really played small college ball. Now, Wade's playing at a higher level than that. But you're right, he's not playing at the blue chip recruit level. You know, you're not seeing multiple Power 5 teams going after him. But he ends up being, you know, an all-timer. And you think, okay, Steph Curry, kind of the same situation. I mean, he played D1 basketball. He was in the NCAA tournament and made runs and all that. But he wasn't at, you know, a traditional powerful state university that's playing Power 5 football, you know. So I wonder how many elite guys we'll see going forward where that's the story. I mean, I think they're going to change the rules and we're going to see elite players not play any college ball at all. You know, but Kobe didn't play college ball, and we know if he had, he would have probably ended up at Duke, right? So he would have been at a blue blood program, and that would have been a done deal.
Yeah, and Dwayne Wade was in the heart of Big Ten country, and no one was really interested. I don't think we're going to see that many guys. I don't think there's that many guys that are available to even be considered. I mean, to me, you're looking at 5, maybe 10 a year. And how many of those guys are really going to pan out? Because we have a track record of kids leaving from high school to go into to the pros. And how many of those guys really turn out to be big-time players? I mean, not that many. Garnett and Kobe obviously did. They're classic examples. And you can stick. You don't necessarily have to be all that. I mean, Lou Williams is still going. I don't think he went to high school or college. He's one of those guys. But a guy like Jermaine O'Neal, I mean, he was okay, right? But I wouldn't say he was all that. He wasn't great as a pro. Kwame Brown, wasn't he the number one pick? And he went from the pro high school to the pros.
Yeah. John Morant,
basically a bust.
Yeah, John Morant would be the guy recently who's, you know, small college guy. We'll see how it plays out. I think he's had a pretty good rookie year. Met or exceeded expectations, depending on where you put the expectations for him. But I don't think anybody thinks he came in below him. Now, he's, you know, the rest of the top picks are Duke, Virginia, Vanderbilt, Texas Tech, UNC. So it mostly is power schools. I guess the next small school guy would be Rui Hachimura. And Gonzaga, that's like Marquette. I mean, you're
not a small school, but
you're not a Power 5 football school with the most resources. But
all the resources they have go into basketball.
Right. Gonzaga's been a power for 2 decades, and Marquette has been on the college basketball map for 4 or 5.
Yeah, although I think that at the time of Dwayne Wade, Marquette was down a little
slumping.
Yeah, because they hadn't had any success until since they won the NCAA title, which was sometime in the 70s with Al McGuire. And so they showed a little clip there at midcourt. Was Majerus dressed in a sport coat and a tie, smacking Al McGuire on the shoulder at half court, and they were celebrating together because Majerus was an assistant on that staff. So it was just like a little flash. They didn't go into it too much. He was just making a point that, I got offered by Marquette, but understand, this wasn't the Marquette of the Al McGuire times. This was the Marquette that had been off the map a little bit. I don't remember where Marquette was at the time when Wade was coming into college, but he brought it up that they hadn't had success for a number of years. And obviously he got them to the Final Four, if I remember correctly, that season. Mm-hmm. Before he took off. So that was a great story. Yeah, I think that's the reason why the Jazz are bringing in 80 to 100 guys or whatever it is. They're not doing it this year, obviously, but they've been doing that for a number of years because you never know. Not everyone is all that at 18 years of age. Guys take a little more time. And plus you're not always you don't always need – I mean, you always need the superstar for sure, but – you can get help from the Royce O'Neals and Joe Ingles of the world who can help your team win 50-some games in the regular season, which that's the barrier for being a pretty good team. And so you have to do your due diligence just all over the world, literally, these days. That's what makes the draft so fascinating, because they draft these foreign kids who play in some of these leagues, and they have very, very modest statistics, including minutes played. I mean, in the low teens. There's a kid coming out of Israel this year. I read it in Sports Illustrated before that thing dies, the most recent edition. And I don't know, they only publish like 15, 16 issues now. But it's some kid who they're looking at him. Can he be the next Doncic? You know, Doncic, obviously, man. They debated whether he should have been the number one pick. Well, 2 years later, of course he should have been. This guy's a superstar in the making. But they didn't know for sure how good he was going to be relative to a couple of other guys who went ahead of him. So the NBA draft, to me, is the most fascinating draft for sure, because you don't know, but you will find out. You'll always find out. It may take, and with Doncic, it basically took by Christmas of his rookie year to say, whoa. And now he's only his second year. And we're thinking, this guy is just awesome. He's 20 years old. He's doing magic-like stats at 20 at the same age. This is incredible. So who's out there that's like him? Because he's not the only one. There's other players out there. or somewhere on this planet, and you got to go find them, and you got to bring them in. And if you got to go to Central Arkansas or wherever, who's the other guy that you said, Rodman, who was Central Oklahoma or something?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah.
Some directional Oklahoma school.
Yeah, you got to go to these places, man. And you got to find them. And it's not just roll out the assembly line at Duke, because you look at a lot of Duke players who received a ton of hype. And for a lot of them, they've been average to maybe even a little bit below average NBA players.
The guy from Israel you're talking about, Denny Avdija?
Yeah.
Avdija.
Yeah.
6'9", 210, small forward. Look out.
Right.
He and a guy named Killian Hayes from France are the top two internationals.
Hayes is more accomplished if you just look at them, what they're doing now or what their body of work has been. But this other Israeli dude that you say, from reading the story, it's like, okay, what can he become? You know, it's not so much he's proven a whole lot now, but he's had spurts, and that's what they do. Mm-hmm. If you get in some type of international competition and you light it up for 3 days, wow, they go nuts. Is that who he really is? And we get him over here in our system, and what can he be with the coaching and the strength and all the stuff that the American professional teams can provide players, which is, you know, the best of the best? What can he become? And it becomes fascinating for these case studies to see, because some of them do go, as we said, Doncic, they go berserk. And other guys, you know, who's the Nick guy, Frank something or other, that they, Hornacek wanted Mitchell, but the Knicks took this other dude. Now, he's okay, but he's no Donovan Mitchell.
NBA comparison, Hedo Turkoglu for Denny Avdija.
Yeah, who was a nice player.
Yeah, nice player, not a star, nice player. But all right, DJ and PK, when we come back, Steve Tate, Hayes Tough Foundation, former Ute safety. We'll talk with him about the Ute defense, rebuild on the fly, and the transfer rule that will be voted on today. Stay with us.